Total Access Show.
Touchdown Tampa Bay!
On your home for the Buccaneers, 620 WDE and US 103.5. Here's your host, Dave Moore.
Welcome to the Total Access Show. Special guest tonight. Really excited to get to it.
I can't believe I'm sitting here with Dave Moore.
How about it? Show. It's a little scary, isn't it? We got you to actually come in rather than calling in from home, but it's my privilege. We got some stories way back from the beginning, but Rondae Barber playing its 200th game, 174 consecutive starts.
You were there for that first one.
I was. It actually started before that. Yeah. I guess I'll start off. But I was in my sixth year when you got drafted, and you know the old locker room, the woodshed, as Gruden referred to.
You talking about the locker story?
Yeah. It's an all-timer. You know, I come in after the draft. I'm in my sixth year. And, you know, we obviously don't have enough lockers for everybody. So instead of putting the temporary ones in the middle, they double us up. And here I come in, and I got this guy Barber's name on my locker. And I'm like, I'm in my sixth year. So I go right over to Darren, the equipment guy. I was like, listen, there are so many guys that are younger than I am in this locker room. Get them out.
Yeah.
He's like, well, listen. You have the same agent. He's a great guy, really a good kid. I'm like, I don't care if he's my brother. Get him out. I don't want him in my locker, you know? 14 years later, you're putting up Hall of Fame numbers, and who would have thunk back at that point in time?
Nobody would have thunk. There would have been a lot of people after training camp that year, after I got out of your locker, after training camp that year, that would have thought that I would have been done a year later. But, you know, good architecture, and I can't use the rest of that quote by Jerry Garcia. People just start to appreciate you after a while.
Well, you know, it's funny. It's really it's a good lesson to young players, even growing up, and things don't go well. Like John Lynch, you know, when he came in,
yeah,
they had him at linebacker. He was a bubble guy. I mean, he was a guy that would tell you if he was sitting here that, you know, he was afraid he was going to get cut. Warren Sapp came in, and he didn't get to play right away. And,
yeah, he had the bus label for a little bit.
Exactly. Derek Brooks came in, and he looked like he was a wide receiver. He was 210 pounds and running all over the place. You know, he did come in and play right away. And I came in, and they moved me to fullback, and I was an H-back, and then I was a tight end, and I was playing special teams to try to survive. But it just goes to show, man, you just got to
stay hold on. With it. Yeah, it's more of a grind than you know, people want to glamorize what we do, but, you know, for people that haven't made it, guys that haven't made it, it's a grind. And, you know, part of that early failure in my career probably has helped me grind my way to 200 games. You know, I appreciate it. You know, I appreciate what it takes. Not having a helmet for 15 games in your rookie season, you know, makes it pretty important to get one every week. So every time they've given me an opportunity to put a helmet on, I've taken it. Actually, John called me last night after the game, and he said, I can't believe it's 200. I remember the first one like it was yesterday. It was not good for you, Rondae. But it's gotten a lot better.
He's one of the few people that can get away and say
yeah,
that, right?
Exactly. But it's gotten a lot
now,
better.
Now, who were their corners when you first got here? Was Donnie Abraham your year or before you?
Donnie came in the year before me. They drafted him
in
the third round, the Iceman. That was a draft class. It had Mike Allstott and who else came in that
Reagan
class?
Upshaw.
Yeah, Reagan. There was a bunch of guys that came in that draft class, and they were trying to hit.
Who was the corner on the other side?
Remember, Martin Mayhew retired that year,
gotcha.
The year I came in, and they brought in Anthony Parker. I think he was
AP.
Yeah, I don't
he
know.
He had the AP poll.
The AP poll. That's a funny story, too. But it was them two, and then Floyd Young, who was a free agent my year, was our nickelback pretty much that whole first season. So I was somewhere in the fourth or fifth corner and just not getting an opportunity to play.
Now, did you feel like, you know, I have to continue to believe in myself? I mean, what made you –
You know,
somehow figure it out, or is this you tried to learn through the guys in front of your eyes?
Yeah,
you know?
I did, and Donnie was really good with me. You know, Donnie always spent time with me trying to teach me what he knew or what he had learned in his first year. And Donnie, and he probably didn't get credit for it. I mean, he was as good a technician on the football field as there was. I mean, now he had some other little things in his game that Monty obviously didn't like, so I didn't stick around here, but – my game's a little bit modeled after him. You know, just the way he covers guys and, you know, plays with his eyes and with his instincts and not so much with, physicalness and whatnot. But, I learned a lot that year, and it helped that Herm Edwards was really willing to deal with me. You know, I think Herm liked me. I think he saw that that I could eventually be a player, and he just stuck with me. I'm sure there was times when there's people in this building, people in the front office that probably wanted to part ways with their third round draft pick that year. I think that I've since made up for it. But I'll give credit to the guys that stuck with me, and the guys in front of me, Donnie, certainly AP. You know, AP was it's funny you brought up AP, because AP used to take me golfing every Friday during the season. He was a 12-year vet or whatever he was, 11-year vet. We used to go golfing every Friday, and we would never talk about football. We just kind of bond a little bit, and that's always stuck with me. So,
and Herm Edwards is a guy that I wanted to talk about, because he was the guy. He was like the associate head coach at the time, mm-hmm. or assistant head coach, and he was always talking about staying under the radar.
Yeah,
and
always.
A lot of the comments you make today that I listened to in your press conference, saying, "Hey, I like being underrated, and I like you know." And he used to talk about the bandwagon getting heavy.
Oh, yeah.
And you got to kick them off because they're going to jump on and off.
That's
and,
absolutely right.
You know, how much did you take from your time with him?
Yeah, everything. I'm telling you, it's I've the guys in the locker room now, even our beat writers, the guys that weren't around when back in those days, probably think I'm being original and coming up with a lot of this stuff,
right.
But it's not. You know, I like probably guys after me will regurgitate stuff that you heard along the way. And a lot of stuff from her. I mean, Herm used to, I haven't missed many practices since I've been here. Probably 10 since I've been in the league. And, that pretty much comes from her. I'm telling me when he was a rookie and he all the way through his career, he practiced every single day. And he took every snap. He used to chide us, when we'd want 3 or 4 reps and in a break. He'd like, son, I used to take every snap in practice. Practice squad or, the scout team and the first team unit. So,
and he used to play full speed and walkthrough.
Yeah,
remember,
exactly.
He said, I never let a guy complete a play cast, even in walkthrough.
Exactly.
That's
so,
taken it to another level.
That's way beyond what I've taken it to. That was a different era. But I learned so much from those guys, man. And I think more than anything, your influences shape who you are. Obviously, it's somewhat on your God-given ability and how you relate it to your play. But you got to learn from somebody.
There's no question, and I can recite all the way back, even to high school, the little things you take from all the people
absolutely.
You meet.
Yeah,
you have to realize that not one player has everything.
No.
So whatever you have, you have to take from this coach and that coach and anybody that's willing to give you information that has been there. You have to, and that's really how you form your own
identity,
personality and your own really survival skills to get through it all.
Yeah, and 200 games later, I'm still relying on those same survival skills, to tell you the truth.
Now, as far as being able to stay healthy for that long. Now, we all know some of it is genetic. You have to be able to play hurt. Now, if you tear ligaments and tear muscles, it's a different deal.
Yeah.
But you have to play
When you're not feeling 100%. I remember my first year, and I felt great after my first year. I had no injuries after my first year.
15 games without a helmet. It's just practice time.
I was perfect. And I remember Donnie saying, okay, just wait till you start playing next year, whenever you start playing. And I was a nickelback my second game, my second year. And then AP got hurt, I think, the fourth or fifth game, and I started from then on out. And by about the seventh game of that season, I was miserable. I couldn't believe how bad my body felt. And
I'm looking at you. You got crooked fingers.
Yeah,
and everything else,
exactly.
So. Your hands look like you're an offensive lineman.
One knee that doesn't straighten all the way out. But you just learn to deal with it. If it's important enough to you, you'll play through them. Because I've had pulled hamstrings, pulled quads, tore PCL in my knee during our Super Bowl run. Broke a bone in my hand during our Super Bowl run, and it was important for me to keep playing. I quote all the time. I hate watching people do my job, and part of that is because
the Wally Pipp, Tony Dungy
Wally
Pipp story.
I'll tell you exactly why. When I was in high school, we were sophomores in 10th grade at Cave Spring High School. Tiki was the starting running back, and I was sitting on the bench, and I was not playing. Free safety got hurt in the second game, and I started, and that guy never saw his job again. College is the same thing. I was redshirted. Tiki was starting, or playing at least. I got my opportunity in my second year, and the guy ahead of me never saw it. Never saw his job again. It's pretty much the same thing that happened in the pros when Anthony Parker got hurt in '98. You know, I went out and played well, and they realized it was time to make a change, and AP never saw his job again. So part of that is fear of that happening to me, but part of it is I really like what I do, and I think I can do it better than the guys around me. That's not putting anything against them, because somebody's going to take my job eventually.
Right.
But
that's how it happens, and that's why, you know, the big conversation, you have a makeshift offensive line going in there. But you as a second-string guy, you get the reps when you can, and your window of opportunity may be small. If the guy in front of you, it happened with me, Jackie Harris kept getting beat up, and when I went in there, I said, listen, I am going to be ready, and I'm going to play well when I get there, because my window might not be very big.
I'm going to make this impossible for you to take this job back from me, and I've always thought that way. It's been my mentality for 14 years now, at least 13 years now, and it'll be that way till I give it up.
Do you do something special to take care of your body? We played with Lynch and Brooks.
Brooks
spent hours in a cold tub and a hot tub. And John Lynch, how many mornings do you see him doing the exercises with
Yagoski
the box?
Stuff.
And
you're like, what are you doing, John? I always felt, you know what's funny? You say that about John. I always looked at John, and I'd walk in the morning, obviously after him, because he'd be here early doing those exercises that Pete gave
for the
him.
People listening, how do you describe his exercises? He'd have all these like
I don't know.
It's all the alignment things. He'd like 30 seconds in each position, and he'd have his clock on alarm, and he'd get in all these positions to try to keep his body in balance.
Yeah, and that's as good as I can explain it. And I'd walk in. I swear to God, I'd walk in, and I'd be, you know what? I'm probably not doing enough right now because this guy. This guy does this every single day without fail. And I'm stumbling into the office in the morning with my eyes half closed. And, you know, he's been here for an hour. So
I used to stretch right before practice after he's already done it for an hour. And I'm like, I'm going to outlast you just because you do that.
Just because you do it. But no, I don't. You know what, Dave? I've honestly figured out how to work smart. You know, I don't kill myself in the off season. You know, I work out pretty consistently. But I don't do anything that is going to strain my body for the season. I think part of the learning curve when you get older is learning how to work smarter. Because I used to work out, you know, before I'd come in and work out with Asanovic, and I'd go and get up at 5 and go work out, and then come in and work out with Asanovic, and then go home and get some rest. But I've done it the smart way. I've tried to reinvent myself every off season, doing something different. This off season, I worked out with my wife a lot, you know, cross training for biathlons, which she got interested in, and you know, it was refreshing. I was energized to do it.
What does that involve?
Biking and running, basically. You know, doing bricks where you get on a bike and ride for 25 miles, and then run for 4 miles, and then bike again. You know, it was intense. It was fun though. You know, and a couple of years ago, or 4 or 5 years ago, I went up and started working out with Tiki at the end of his career with Joe Carini in New Jersey.
More low impact type stuff.
That was high impact stuff. That was powerlifting, yada yada yada. But you know, I hit 32, and I was like, I can't do that anymore.
But see, I was always afraid at the end of my career. Like, this is the only way I've ever known how to do it. It's kept me in this long. So why at this point would I get away from that? So I used to have to go in camp and sit in a hot tub to be able to get on a treadmill to warm up.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of anti-inflammatories, a lot of, you know.
I know exactly what you're saying. But I honestly think that changing up every offseason has helped me want to continue to work out in the offseason. Because, I mean, we've been working out our whole lives, man.
Sure.
You know, I don't know if people see Dave Moore anymore, but he doesn't look like the Dave Moore that played when we played.
Well, it's a little easier on the joints.
You've obviously changed since since 3 years ago, whenever it was you retired.
I see friends that come in and are like, hey, here's Ann in half a day.
Yeah, exactly. So you just got to adjust. I've learned to adjust and keep it interesting, be honest with you. And I work out with Curtis here. Curtis Schultz, our strength guy. I work out with him during the off season,
but it helps to have a strength coach that understands that the same routine doesn't work for every guy.
Yeah, yeah. And I think once you get older, strength coaches let you do that too.
Right.
And that's helped me. That's helped me. We got an understanding, so to speak.
Well, the style of player you are, I mean, you're a physical corner. Usually when you get older guys, they like to play more of the finesse game, kind of get in coverage a little bit. But you're in the backfield. I mean, you're making tackles. You can't feel good on Monday and Tuesday regardless of your record.
There's been about 3 weeks this year where I had 10, 12 tackles that I did not feel good the next day.
And it takes you till about Thursday
or Friday.
It takes
me about Thursday where I'm not limping around and I can get my shoulders, you know, get my arms above my head. But that's just who I've been. It's who I've always been. That's how I had to impress Monty Kiffin when I first started playing. You know, I had to do those types of things to get on the football field and keep my position with this football team. And it's just carried over. You know, hopefully it's rubbing off on my young guys because, like I said, somebody's eventually going to have to do it after me.
Well, over 1,200 tackles. I mean, you certainly spend a lot of time. And the one thing you do so well is you're able to get that guy in the open field on the ground. And that's not an easy thing to do. Get on him before he gets going.
But yep.
I know as a young guy, you know, you can Monday you're sore, Tuesday you recover a little bit, you're ready for Wednesday.
Yeah.
But as you get older, am I wrong?
No,
like
it's
Thursday still a little
absolutely
rough.
The truth. Friday, when
Gruber,
you go,
Paul Gruber used to tell me that, and I'd kind of laugh.
Yeah.
But then I was like, man.
Friday, you
no
feel
joke.
Friday, you feel like you're ready to go.
All right, we got to take a break on the Total Access Show. This my guest today, Rhonde Barber. There are 174 consecutive starts. We're going to take your calls when we come back. This is the Buccaneer Radio Network.
Buccaneers Total Access returns on 620 WDAE and US 1035, the home of the Buccaneers.
Welcome back to the Total Access Show. Tonight, my guest, Rhonde Barber. Hall of Fame, man. That's coming.
Throw that around.
What do you got? 30, 35 interceptions?
I got 39.
20, 39. Sorry, 39. I didn't mean to short you.
Yeah, you shorted.
Once you get over 30, and then how many sacks you have? 25.
25, yeah. Got some numbers out
I'm going to give out some phone numbers here. We already have a couple callers. I want to talk a little about some of these young guys you're surrounded with. You got to feel really old. We found out today, youngest team in the NFL.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, phone numbers, Hillsboro.
Not because of me.
You're bringing the average up.
Yes, I am.
Hillsboro, 813-990-4620. Pinellas, 727-461-4620. Toll free, 800-546-4620. And 800-596-BUCKS-2827. So, let's talk a little bit about these young guys. You are the support corner. You've done it for a very long time and a reason that the Bucks have been able to stop the run in the past and been so obviously – you know, 11 times in your career since you've been here, you've been in the top 10 on defense.
Yeah.
So obviously that's saying something. You've been surrounded certainly by a lot of
tremendous
football players. But you have a young team.
Very young.
And now you're looking at a young Gerald McCoy. You're looking at a young Price. You have Tlaib. You have Myron Lewis.
Yeah.
Cody Grimm behind you.
Yep.
Can you compare kind of – you know, because that defense was young. 97, they were young.
They were young, yeah. They're 97,
do they have the talent to potentially get to that point?
I think, of course they do. Of course they do. I think, it's hard to say any player that's playing now is less talented than players then. Equivalent players are less talented.
Yeah, but I mean, every football team has talent now. But they're not. They're not Warren Sapp.
Yeah.
They're not Derek Brooks. You understand what I'm asking.
Those guys
were special, of course.
Absolutely special. And they became special over a number of years. So will E.J. Biggers turn into a Donnie Abraham? Will Gerald McCoy turn into a Sapp-type player? I mean, it's almost unfair to make that comparison. Obviously, they have the talent. They do. They just it's on film. They put the work in. They can absolutely be those kind of guys. But right now, you know, they got to be who they are. You know, whenever they ask me about achieving greatness or getting to greatness, I tell them to be who you are. You know, find out who you are first, and then make the effort to be great. Because once you know you, once you spend time knowing you, and I tell my guys this all the time. You know, when you go watch film of our game or our practices. Watch you. You know the scheme. You know what we're doing on defense. Go watch you. Watch how you play in that scheme. Watch how you move in that scheme, and go perfect your craft. You know, once you do that, then you can turn into those guys. Like Warren did it innately. You know, when you were around Warren did it without even trying. Brooks was just as athletic as any linebacker I played with in his prime, and Lynch put the effort in. I mean, Lynch wasn't a natural athlete. I mean, you know that. He wasn't. He wasn't gifted like the guy we played this past week, Adrian Wilson. He didn't look like that guy. He was more of a guy that had to put the work in, had to study himself, study how he was going to evolve in his defense, and then he became great. The guys on our team, the young guys on our team, once they figure out who they are, they can be that. But right now they're young. You know, they're somewhat inconsistent, which is why you see the up and down play on our defense at this point. But they're growing every day. They're growing. They'll find a way to get better. You know, we have great coaches in our building. I honestly believe we have great coaches. Starts with Raheem, obviously, but the other guys in our building can really coach these guys up, and I think they can turn into those guys.
How much time do you spend in the film room with these guys? Do you watch it as a group? You know, I always walk through the meeting rooms, and you were in there by yourself, and you were
For the most part, I watch it by myself. But honestly, the past couple of weeks, 3 or 4 weeks, I see Myron sticking his head in there. You know, like, what are you doing? You know, can I watch film with you? Yeah, sure. Come on. Biggers does it almost every day. Keeb even sticks his head in there from time to time. So if they want to watch it with me, want to see what I'm doing, then that's great. But I tell them, you know, don't go look at what we're doing in Underbark or what we're doing in Bison or, you know how to play cover two. Go look at how you can make yourself better by watching yourself on film. That's the only way to do it. So,
well, when you talk to guys like, you know, Akib, I mean, he's a type of player that would drive Monty crazy.
Oh, yeah.
Because he tries to read routes. But, that's why he can get interceptions like he does. But fortunately for him, he's sitting on a route yesterday.
Yeah.
And Fitzgerald goes blowing by him, and thank goodness Hall overthrew him. You know, because he'll break your heart as fast as he'll come up with a big play. Now, what do you tell him? Because, Raheem describes you as that vigilante type player, but yours is a lot more calculated.
Yeah.
You understand your responsibility, and you know by formation or look from watching film that your responsibility is not going to be threatened.
Yeah.
So you have the opportunity to cheat a little bit with eyes and stuff like that.
That's exactly right.
So do you tell him that? What are you doing?
That's where Keeb has to grow. But
will he understand it? Does he have the patience to do that, or is he just that guy?
That's what it's going to take. It's going to take patience. Well, put it this way. If Akib wants to be considered the best corner in the league, he's going to have to learn to do that. The guys that they talk about, the Champ Baileys, Nnamdi Asamoah, Charles Woodson, as the best corners in the league, they understand when they can take risk. You know, Akib's so athletic. If he played cautious every single snap of every game, he'd still probably end up the season with 5 or 6 picks.
Why don't you tell him that? He's giving me chest pain in the box. He's driving me bananas. I thought, what is he doing?
You know what? It's a process with him. And like with any young player, he's on a curve. You know, he's climbing up that curve. Key, believe me, understands what's going on in our defense and where he can and can't make plays. It's just a matter of him going out on Sunday and trusting it, you know, believing that, you know, if I play within the system, I'm still going to be a splash play guy. I mean, I've done it for 14 years.
And what about Biggers? Is Biggers that same type guy, or is he a little better within the system?
I think he's a little bit better within the system at this point just because of, you know, his opportunity. You know, we drafted a corner in the 3rd round to essentially take his spot. You know, we drafted a guy, a big physical corner out of Vanderbilt to be our nickel corner. And for this year, and Biggers held him off. So I think Biggers understands that if he wants to continue to grow and become that type of player, he's going to have to play within the system. That being said, he has the liberty to take his chances. We all do. Jimmy Lake is best at scheming up opportunities for us. And if you miss an opportunity, you know, you get whatever. You face the consequences if you miss an opportunity in our room.
Big play.
Yeah, exactly.
Give it up the big play.
So, you know, that he has the ability to do both. Biggers reminds me a little bit more of me than he's not the same type of player as Akib. He's a little bit more athletic than I am probably, but you know, he can be a really good football player.
You ready for some phone calls?
Yeah, man, let's.
Well, I got one question before the phone call. Coin toss. How come you always call tails? Now, I'm a big fan of that. That's the only reason I noticed that, because everybody always calls heads, and I've always been a tails guy, and I hear you on the speaker before the game, and I'm like, I like it. He's calling tails.
This is the absolute truth to this answer. I always call tails just because tails never fails. The cliche, yada, yada, yada. Sometimes you go out there, and if you're playing an away game, they'll bring the coin, and the heads will be the NFL logo. Mm-hmm. The tails, I don't know where they get their coins from all the time. The tails will be the visiting team's logo. I will never pick tails if it's the visiting team's logo is on the tail. I'll pick the heads, take the NFL logo.
Really?
Yeah, that's my philosophy. But if it's a regular coin or just an NFL, whatever, wherever on either side, I'll pick tails every time.
How about that?
Yeah.
You learn something every day. I never had the opportunity to call. Right? I've always stood out there, but I never got to be the caller. Anyway, we're going to go to the phones. We have Israel. You're on with Rondé Barber.
By the way, in overtime, always take tails.
Okay, that's fair. Israel, are you there?
Hey, Israel, yeah, how are you, man?
Pretty good, brother. Thanks for taking my phone call, gents. Rondé, just wanted to call you and say congratulations on your 174th start in the NFL.
Thank you.
As you well know, you've always been my favorite player in the Bucs.
Yep.
And definitely hoping for when you retire in about 5-6 years. Don't leave us yet, buddy. Don't leave us yet.
I'm going to need your knees for that, Israel.
I don't know. I think my knees are pretty shot, man. I used to run cross country, so I used to run about 100 miles.
No, I definitely don't want them then. I'll take that back.
Yeah, you don't want mine. Yeah, I was listening to you on the radio, and I was thinking about everything you said because I use kind of like the same repertoire, and of course not as intense as you, because now I kind of doing the same thing that your wife does. I do, I'm actually doing trail runs now.
Mm-hmm.
So it's tough, man. I know what you mean. I'm 34, and one of the things that I've learned is listen to my body.
Yeah,
so if there's
absolutely.
Days where I don't, you know what I mean? If there's days where I don't feel like going running and doing some intense hill training or some track workout, I won't do it. I'll just go to the pool
you know, do like get on a bike.
Meters yeah. Or, yeah, exactly. You know, because yep. It's tough.
It's definitely helped me. It's definitely helped me, and it's just getting smarter with age. You know, when you're younger, you try to push through all that stuff, and it probably contributes to more injuries. But since probably 2005, I've really tried to be smart about training in the off season, just so I know that I'm ready when it's really time to compete in August and September.
What?
Yeah,
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Israel.
No, it's okay. But I was going to call real quick, Ben, and I'll listen to your answer on over the radio. I wanted to ask you. I'm a little concerned on the defensive line. I know this has been something that we've mentioned quite a few times throughout the shows, and I still see there's no pressure in the interior line, and that's a cause of concern because it puts more pressure on the corners and the linebackers. So has there been something? I know you're not part of the front line, but has there been something where, you know, they're continually to work on? I know Gerald McCoy has been very consistent about it. He takes a huge responsibility.
Yeah.
I listen to him on his radio show, you know. I'll go ahead and listen on your radio.
Yeah.
Thanks, brother.
Yep.
And I'll see you in Canton, Ohio, man.
Cheers, man. Thanks, Israel. You know what? The front four, man, the numbers aren't there, obviously. And if you look at those stats, it frustrates you. Conversely, you look at our numbers on the back end. I think we're leading the league in interception. I think I heard Raheem say this on his show, that the pressure's there. We're just not cashing in. I've had three or four opportunities at the quarterback and let him slip out of my hands. Just either he stepped up in the pocket and I wasn't able to change direction on him. But the pressure's still there. I mean, what are young guys doing? I'll give them credit. I'll give Gerald and Roy and Kyle, I'll give them all the credit in the world because they take responsibility for this now. They're not shying away from it and saying, no, we're doing our jobs. We're doing it exactly the way we should be doing it. You know, they know that they need to create more pressure, and they know that they need to find ways to get vertical in the run game to create disruptions and whatnot, and it's been addressed. And they've looked themselves in the mirror and said, we'll get it done. You know, we have to get it done. Our defense is counting on them. But that being said, I mean, you still have to take into account that these are a bunch of young guys. They're still trying to figure this deal out, how to play against, you know, other great players on the other side of the ball every single week. I mean, it's not as simple as having a guy be a first-round draft pick or a second-round draft pick or a third-round draft pick in Roy's case, and you're automatically a great player. I mean, it takes time. I mean, Dave can attest to this. It takes time. And it speaks somewhat to what I was saying earlier. It takes time for these guys to get comfortable enough where they become huge playmakers. We mentioned Sapp, you know, it took them a while. You know, give those guys some time. By the end of this year, hopefully this is hit in the discussion.
Well, I think another thing you have to realize with putting pressure on a quarterback is it's not all related to number of sacks. Like when you come off the edge, a lot of it has to be with understanding your pocket control.
Yeah.
You get collapsed from the inside, it prevents the quarterback from stepping up.
And
so it forces him to throw it a lot of times before he's ready in third and long. That's why it's so important to stop the run.
Yeah.
And then if he can't step up, then when you come off the edge, he can't avoid
you. Exactly.
You're going to wind up getting that sack. So you won't see it on the stat sheet where they have sacks, but just being around a guy, preventing him from stepping up.
Make him throw out a phone booth.
It's unrealistic to ask Gerald McCoy to come in his rookie year to have 12 sacks. But you can say, hey, if you stay in your lane and you collapse the pocket,
good things are going to happen.
Because if your Styles G is able to beat that guy around the outside, the quarterback can't step up, and he's either going to get flushed out of pocket, throw it before he's ready, or he's going to get a sack. And that's where the interception stat might have something to do with quarterbacks throwing it before they're ready.
It happened a couple of times Sunday, yesterday.
Right. He threw it before he was ready.
Absolutely.
The one time when Sean Jones did come free, he hit him, and that's where Geno got his interception.
Yep.
My question is, what is the key? Now, this defense, all the way back to Monty days, is stopping a run between the tackles.
Mm-hmm.
What is the key to that? How much of that is want to? How much of that is technique? How much of that is being a football player, staying in your gap, but then again –
That's coming out of it to make a tackle. That's it right there. When Warren and Booger, when they were playing great in that position, they always understood that they could control their gap, penetrate through their gap, and find a way, if it wasn't going through their gap, to shed that guy and make a play. I don't know how many times I saw Booger and Warren do that stuff.
But that's about being a player, because you do have your gap, and once you know he's not coming through there.
And that's understanding. That's run recognition, so to speak. You know, Gerald's come off the ball and see that he's got his gap, and the player's no way the ball's going to come back in his gap. He can shed his guy and go make a play. He's on a learning curve. He's on a learning curve. He's got to learn to be a player. That's why, like what I was saying earlier, you got to learn how to perfect your craft, what he does well. And that's going to take time. He needs to do it on Sundays before he realizes that – or he needs to do it during the week. So when he gets to Sunday, he realizes what plays that he can make during the game. And, you know, he's getting there. You know, he really is. I think he watches enough of that old film, Gerald does, and he can speak to it. And you can ask him on the show. He can speak to how he understands how to make those plays. I don't think he, at this point, is comfortable making those plays yet. But he'll get there, man. He's smart enough guy, has enough will and want to do it.
All right, we got to take another break. We do have some callers. Hang in there. We're coming back on the Total Access Show. This is the Buccaneer Radio Network.
Total Access continues on 620 WDAE and US 1035. Here again is your host, Dave Moore.
Welcome back to the Total Access Show with Rondae Barber. One quick question before we go right back to the phones. How long you want to do it?
I'm going to do this until you retire from radio so I can take your job.
What do you want to do? You had the barber shop, right, with your brother when he was still playing. Is that what you want to get into? You want to get into commentating?
I honestly do not know.
Playing golf?
I will definitely be playing a lot of golf. But I've always said when plan A stops working, I'll work on plan B. When did you know? When did you decide?
I didn't.
You did,
right? When I was debating on retiring, Jeff and I had a conversation.
Yeah.
I said, you know, that's not something I really aspired to get into.
Yeah.
You know, I was never really a big talker around the locker room. Right?
Neither am I.
But I was the type of player that had to understand the game, so it came easy to me to explain what's going on. You know, you watch all that film. I still get the same film as a player when I prepare to do the radio.
Yeah.
This is why this play worked. This is why it didn't work.
Yeah.
You know, this guy got, you know, I mean, I never played in the Tampa 2 defense, but I can tell you a lot of times.
Yeah.
Why it's not working.
Yeah, you know, you game plan against it, just like
you're gonna have to come back next year if you want to beat the 220. I got 220 games. You got a little work to do.
Am I behind you too?
Well, not in Tampa because I had 30 in Buffalo. But you're behind me overall. How many John have overall?
I think I already got him. Right? I don't know.
I don't know either.
I don't know. JR got to look that one up. I have no idea.
Well,
I'd have to come back next year and play all 16 to get Brooksy. So.
Well, yeah. I think I got him total games, though.
You probably do.
I do. Anyway, all right, back to the phones.
We'll rub that in them next time I see.
Yeah, the four of us are going to have to sit down and talk about it. Exactly. We have Adam. You're on with Rondé.
Hey, Rondé, how are you today?
I'm good, Adam. How are you, man?
Well, it's been a while since I've talked to you. Your last show with Ronnie, or your show with Ronnie before the Philadelphia game was the last time
I got
a chance to talk to you.
That's years and years ago.
Well, that was a good off week. It was a better weekend. It was a even better weekend, you know, the week after. But
yep.
You and I had a good conversation. I don't know if you remember this, but I told you about a dream my brother had months earlier that you guys were going to go through Philadelphia and then end up playing the Raiders in the Super Bowl. And the whole thing like came to fruition. But, you know, when you and I were done, you were like, man, that was a great call. So I felt pretty good about that. But my question is, which game in your career, and I do have a question about Josh Freeman after this, but which game in your career was the most satisfying for you? Like, you really thought that you had absolutely just killed it out there. Which game?
It was that one, without a
doubt.
There
you go.
It was the Philly game. And I'll answer your question real quick. There's a lot of reasons. And Monty told me this right before he was leaving to go to Tennessee a couple years ago. He always used to go back and watch that game. And he told me, he's like, I don't know if I've ever been around a corner that had played a more complete game than I played in that game. And you know, as a player, you sometimes kind of – you dismiss it, and it's just kind of what you do. It's your job. But I think I registered a stat in every possible category in that game. A lot of things that we had schemed up just for Philadelphia happened in that game, and I did just about all of them exactly right. And then obviously I had the interception to seal the game. But you know, a lot of people have told me that that watched that game critically said that as a corner, I don't know if he's ever seen a guy impact a game as much as I did in that game. So it's got to be that one.
Well, it was exciting for all of us because after I got off the radio, I called all my friends and everybody at work. I'm like, yeah, I told him about the dream and everything else, and he was really pumped up after the call. And so we watched that game, and we were kind of like, man, I wonder if, he's just motivated and, everything that goes on. Just watching, I have never, and I'm not an expert like Monty Kiffin, but I have never seen anybody play that position, dominate another team the way you did. So I was wondering
It was definitely that one.
So that's good. My question real quick about Josh Freeman. I was absolutely totally against his pick when we got him. I have a friend that watches college football, and he didn't think much of him, but so I was thinking, man, he's probably going to suck or whatever. But after that, literally starting with the Green Bay game, you could see his football IQ was just extremely high, and he's just completely not let me down since then.
Yep.
Is he as good as I think he is? Because I really think this guy's special.
He's probably better than you think he is, to be honest with you, man. I remember when Raheem was getting ready to draft, getting ready to go into that draft. He was – couple months on the job, maybe in a couple weeks on the job. I don't even know. That's all that whole timeline is a blur now. But me and Rye used to watch a lot of film together, and he came in and he said, "Hey, I want you to look at this kid." He's like, "Tell me if I'm missing something." And he put on Josh's his college tape, and some of the throws that he was making, some of the reads that he was making, just his complete lack of concern about throwing picks or his demeanor, which we were all talking about now, showed itself on film back at Kansas State. And he was like, "Tell me if I'm wrong looking at this kid, and if he's available, we shouldn't take him." He's like, Raheem was telling me that he thought he might be the best quarterback in that draft. And of course, there was other everybody had their opinion. But I said, hey, if the film doesn't lie, film doesn't lie. And I think that's obviously what their decision was at the end of the day, that he was just too good of a prospect to pass up. And it's been the case. He played at Kansas State, and he wasn't very well known outside of Kansas State. But we are blessed to have got him on this football team. It shows itself every time he goes on the field. He's only going to get better from here. So I can't imagine what he's going to be like in a couple of years. He's truly going to be a dominant player in the NFL.
Well, he's been impressive to watch, in 2-minute situations. But yesterday, when he had time, it's really the first time I've seen him have significant time back there. And the two deep balls, and we've had a lot of quarterbacks in and out of here.
Yep, absolutely.
And for somebody
14.
That got, I can't. We try to figure out one day how many I've caught passes from, but
at least 10 or 11.
Yeah, at least.
At least.
But for him to throw those couple deep balls to hit Mike Williams in stride, and you know a lot of those play actions.
Yeah.
When you run slants and, you know, skinny posts, the angles never come out the same.
Yeah, exactly
and
right.
You see more often than not, the ball is not accurately thrown because he has to come out to beat the safety or he's trying to get away from the corner, and it never seems to be executed like you would expect.
Yeah. Well, you've been down there with him. You've seen how the ball spins out of his hand now. It's I mean, first of all, it looks like a Nerf football in his hand. His hands are so big. But he's so precise throwing deep ball because he can spin it exactly like he wants to. The throw to Aurelius was – unbelievable to me. I mean, it was like a G pass look. He ends up on the right side and throwing across the field, and it was a dime. You know, he threw it right on Tom. It's impossible for me to imagine throwing that kind of ball. Obviously, I'm 5'10", he's 6'5", but with that ball 55-60 yards down the field with that kind of touch, that's rare now. That's very rare.
There's no question, and that was one of the things I'm glad he asked. You know, you're a pair. You've seen a lot of great quarterbacks. You played against Favre. You played against all those guys that have the ability
Brady,
to really sling it. And you're saying that, you know, he could potentially be
that kind of guy. What separates them, you know, and a guy that's 22-year-old, what separates him from those elite guys is the precision on all the little stuff, like the underneath routes, you know. You know, Peyton Manning makes a killing throwing three or four routes now.
Right.
I mean, he never misses.
Right.
He never misses. And he has other, obviously, routes in his tree. But Peyton has three or four routes that he throws absolutely perfect every single time. If they need a third and whatever, third and eight, and Dallas Clark's running a bench route behind a hide, behind a who's their wideout?
You're speaking Spanish to the listeners.
I have to listen. But when he's got to throw a corner route to Dallas Clark on third and eight, there's a good chance it's going to hit Dallas Clark in the same spot every single time. And Josh will get to that. You know, he's working with the same guys over a number of years. He'll turn into that guy.
Right. When we've seen him against the blitz, I mean, he's getting very good at recognizing what he's seeing.
Yeah.
And, you know, the receivers have to beat that one-on-one coverage. And the more in tune and the longer he plays with those guys, it'll turn into like a Mark Clayton and Dan Marino, where he can beat that one-on-one. He's going to know how he releases.
Yep.
He's going to know how fast he's going to come out of there. And that's just time.
Yep. He'll get there.
All right, back to the phones. We have Ben. You're on with Rondé.
Hey, good evening, guys.
Hey, Ben. How are you, man?
I'm well. I'm actually getting off work right now. Just going to have a good night there at the home.
Good.
I had a great Monday today because we had a good one yesterday. So thank you for that, Ron. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
So just a comment, and then I'll ask a question. But my comment is, I think you've got 196 consecutive starts.
174 consecutive starts.
I think you've got 196 left, man. I really do.
Oh, 196 left?
Yeah.
He'll be in a wheelchair by the time he's done.
Oh, no, I could barely get out of bed this Monday, and I didn't do much on Sunday.
No, but, man, you look mean out there. I think my favorite play from yesterday, and I have one every game, but I think yesterday was when you tripped up homeboy there in the backfield late in the game, and then you just stood over him, and I could just see your
Beanie
mouth
Wells.
On. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, I play with a little bit of a chip on my shoulder. It's a product of being the shortest guy on the field, the smallest guy on the field.
A little man's complex.
Yeah, I won't deny my Napoleonic complex a little bit, but you know it's funny. My teammates get a kick. Roy Miller came up to me after we're on the plane. He said, "Man, the stuff you were saying to Beanie Wells after you tripped him up, man, had him just dying laughing." So it's I've kind of evolved into that guy. I can't let.
Are you a trash talker? I mean, what kind of stuff do you say? Because I only talk
trash when I, you know, in the heat of the moment, you know.
Like what kind of stuff that you can repeat on video?
It's not repeatable.
No.
You know what's funny? I was mic'd up once, I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago. And they were going to show it on NFL, whatever, wherever they show it at. They probably got a minute of usable stuff.
A lot of beeping going on.
So I got the, you know, the four disc that they send.
And, you know, my wife wanted to watch it. I was like, you might not want to watch this.
You might have a different opinion.
You might may have a different opinion of your husband after you watch it. But yeah, I get a little intense, and it's how I keep myself going. Yeah, that's how I can gain my build my courage up to hit a guy that's 100 pounds heavier than me. You know, I have to be that guy. I have to flick the switch.
Ben, is he still there? Okay, I got a question for you.
Okay.
Have you ever been hurdled? We saw LeGarrette Blount, and it's going to make every highlight film.
Yes.
And listen, Kerry Rhodes, he didn't go to his knees.
He was
belly high.
Yeah.
You been hurdled?
Last year, tight end from Philadelphia, Selleck.
I think I remember that.
Yeah. I was covering somebody else down the field. He beat I can't remember who was covering him to the sideline. He turned up field, you know, and I don't really try to avoid contact. I was going to try. I mean, I had to hit him. I mean, there's no one else around. I had to hit him. I was trying to hit him right in the belly, you know, midsection. You know, it's not like I dove off my feet or I was going to hit him face up, just either get run over.
Hope for the best.
Yeah, either get run over and drag him to the ground. And, you know, I had a little bit of, you know, I don't know, 60-degree lean in my body, and he went completely over me.
I remember he got way up there.
Way over me. I was like, are you kidding? What do you want me to do? What do you want me to do? I'm in an open field tackle situation. I'm trying to hit him up high, and he goes over me. So,
do you change your technique when you have big guys coming at you versus – you know, it's funny to listen to you talk because everybody thinks you're in the NFL and you're just – you know, this tough guy that's going to go up to you. But the stuff like that crosses your mind.
Yeah.
Like, you know,
absolutely.
When I was playing fullback, I go running up in there. I got Jack Del Rio, and I'm like, damn, I got to hit him again.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I learned a lot of tackling from John. You know, John was known for these big, you know, explosive hits, and he did that a lot. But a lot of times, John, and he told me, this is how you tackle. You grab and you drag. You basically grab and fall to the ground. Grab something that you know you can't let go of and fall to the ground. That's how I tackle a lot. And I hit him with my chest, so I give somewhat of a concussion there when I hit. Not mental concussion, but just concussion
stop his momentum.
Yeah, and then just drag him to the ground. So, you know, Raheem talks about it, and Jimmy talks about it now, about having a tackling plan.
Does it change for the big guys? That's
it
my
definitely
question.
Changes for the big guys. It absolutely changes. Like last week.
What do you do, like run by him and grab him from behind?
I didn't mind tackling Steven Jackson from the side and behind a lot last week because, I mean, I hit him 10 times. And they were like, oh, you had a bunch of tackles. I was like, I don't think any of them those were like a squared up hit. they were all jump on his back.
Well, they look good. It doesn't look like that. But I'll be thinking about that the next time I see you out there. Coming off the edge, you look a lot tougher. You don't have to take them straight on.
Exactly.
All right, we got to take another break. We'll be back in a minute. Mike, hang in there. It's just a Total Access show. We'll be back in a minute on the Buccaneer Radio Network.
Listening to Buccaneers Total Access. This is 620 WDAE and US 1035, the home of Buccaneers football.
We are finishing up with Rondé Barber. I think we can turn this into a two-hour show if we want to.
Yeah, really.
We got one last caller, and then we'll finish up here. We have Mike. You're on with Rondé Barber.
Well, Mr. Barber, it's an honor to talk to you. I'll tell you, I'm from St. Louis.
All right.
For born and raised and all this stuff. Been down here 30 years, and I have never seen better football or heard better football players on the radio than I have at my time here in Tampa Bay.
Oh, I like it.
And I'll tell you what, you think that Philadelphia game was your favorite. I was screaming. I was rabid through the whole thing. I had to have tranquilizers or something. I mean, my God, what a tremendous game. I swear to God, you guys are the greatest. And there's so many classy, well-spoken players on the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. No wonder you guys are 5-2.
Yeah, they give us the opportunity to express ourselves. So I think we do it the right way. Jeff Ryan's picked out some good players to put on the air.
Boy, I'll tell you. But, you know, the thing about it is it just seems like intelligence and class and everything are on your team. And you and your brother and everybody that I've heard on the radio, Brooks and, you know, just everybody that's on there that gets interviewed is really a class act, and I really want you guys to know you're appreciated by the fans and me and everybody else in the town.
Thank you, Mike. Appreciate that call.
All right. Well, I got to ask you. We could probably spend an hour on this question, but I have to ask you. Mm-hmm. You know, you went to the Super Bowl. Probably the biggest, one of the biggest plays in this franchise history. Mm-hmm. It was the big interception in Philly. But you've played for Tony Dungy, John Gruden, and now Raheem, who's a good friend of yours. Mm-hmm. Kind of, how do they rank, or how do you?
You know,
and that's a tough question, I've been asked the same question. Yeah. But give me your opinion about that.
It's hard to rank because they're
very different.
All three completely different. Completely different. You know, Tony was a great guiding force, you know, as a head coach. And I was young and I didn't know any better. So my first experience in league, I always consider it, you know, one of my best experiences in the league because he brought me here. You know, he saw me in college, wanted to bring me here. Eventually had enough confidence in me to turn me into the player that I am now. So I respect him for that. But it's impossible to compare his style with John's style because John's style was 180 degrees.
Completely.
Going the other – like if they were – they would be two ships passing in the night going east and west. And John was so fiery and so you know, in your face. So, you know, I have – these are my expectations for you, and I'm going to put it point blank what it is. And Raheem, and obviously I have some deference to Raheem just because of our personal relationship. He was my coach for a lot of years before he became my head coach. His style is more like me. I mean, we're friends because we're a little bit alike. If I was going to be a head coach, I'd be more like Raheem. I'd have the atmosphere in the locker room. I'd want it exactly the way that he has it. You know, the way he addresses his team, the way he can relate to, you know, somewhat their culture because he's a young guy that understands where they're coming from. You know, I think the players today need that kind of coach. You know, I think they need a guy that can relate to them on more than just a player-coach relationship, and that's what Raheem gives you. I think he does that better than Tony or John, and that's nothing against Tony or John. That's just not the way they coached. But I've been fortunate, man. I've had three really good head coaches, three great head coaches, really, and it's been a pleasure, been an honor to be associated with all three of them.
All right, we have less than a minute. We're not going to worry about Atlanta because we get to see it.
Yeah.
Next week,
yeah, all those guys can talk about it.
Regardless of how long you have left, what do you want to be remembered as a coordinator? You want to be that physical run stopper, the coverage guy?
I want to be considered a guy that did it all. I don't want anybody to be able to pigeonhole me into one type of corner. I've always said that you know, being a dynamic player is how I'd love people to look at me. So when they go back and think about Rondé Barber as a player, they don't just say, "Oh well, he intercepted a lot of passes," or "Oh, he had a couple of sacks too." You know, I want them to think that he went out every Sunday, gave it his all, and did every single thing.
Well, I want to thank you for taking the time to come on a short night, a late night.
No.
And
no.
Thank you to all the callers.
Allow me to plug one second real quick. November 2nd tomorrow, can we get people to exercise their democratic right to go vote?
I'm all for it, buddy.
I'm going out.
Get her done. Well, thanks for listening to the Total Access Show. This is the Buccaneer Radio Network. Good night.
You've been listening to Buccaneers Total Access on 620 WDAE and US 103.5, the home of Buccaneers football.